This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
And you guys, over the last few years, I've had a number of Christian friends who have had cancer. Of course, many other problems too, but cancer is a big problem. And in most of those cases, before the cancer came, they had no inkling that life was about to change, that life was good. They are enjoying family and friends. They were serving God with all their hearts. And then they get the news one day, you have cancer. It's like a kick in the stomach. And that's when a journey began for them. And in fact, I like to call that kind of a journey one of God's sea crossings. And when I say sea crossings, I'm not talking one of these modern Mediterranean cruises. I'm talking about one of those 19th century transatlantic sea crossings in which everything was uncertain, in which there was a lot of pain, in which there was time consuming. Before my friends got the news, man, they were relatively happy, and then that changed pretty quickly in terms of what they had to deal with. And I've been there too. I've been, you know, carefree one moment, and then the next moment I'm in the middle of one of God's sea crossings. Many of you have been there too. Everything is smooth one moment, you're happy-go-lucky, life is good, and then bam, something surfaces that puts you on a sea crossing. It could be a loss, a challenge. It could be bad news that puts you on a journey. Or it could be bad news about someone you love that puts you on the journey, right? Because that hurts too. These six verses that we're going to deal with today in John 6, man, they talk about a sea crossing. And the sea crossing that we're going to look at here today is going to give us some lessons about what is the nature of those sea crossings, and also how do we deal with them. We're going to review these lessons today, and I hope my prayer is that God will encourage hearts all over the congregation as we look at this. Excuse me. Lesson number one, we're going to begin right away, and it's pretty clear in life, there's always another journey. This doesn't change. Excuse me, just one moment. Thank you so much. Okay, thank you. I had to do that. So there's always another journey. Let's look at verse 16. Look what it says. When evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, got into a boat, and started across the sea to Capernaum. Now, what's interesting about this passage is what came right in front of it. The disciples had just witnessed the miraculous feeding of thousands of people. It must have been a mountaintop experience. They must have been pondering God's miraculous power. They must have still been thinking about how great it all was, how close they felt to Jesus, what a connection was there. They must have been thinking about the limitless possibilities that lay ahead. But that mountaintop experience is now done. And now comes verse 16, and now it's time for real life. Jesus sends them away. He sends them to this boat, to this sea crossing, probably to get them away from the crowd. Because the crowd thought that these guys were rock stars, and they were going to feed them for the rest of their lives, and they were going to make them their leaders. So they needed to get away from all of that. So they go down to the sea, and that meant, guess what? It meant another journey. It meant another transition from here to there. The disciples were on the east side of the lake, and they had to go to the northwest side of the lake where Capernaum was. Not necessarily a big deal, not always a dangerous crossing, but man, we see that here it's evening. That's almost dark, a little light left, and the crossing would take time and it would take effort, and you'd want it to go smoothly. You see, the sea crossing, man, it's a great metaphor for what happens in ordinary life. You're enjoying God's good gifts. It's all beautiful. You see Him and His work, and you have a great sense of His presence. And then you go down to the sea, and you get in the boat. It's what you do to make it from one place to another place. There's always another sea crossing waiting in our lives. There's always another transition. There's always another journey from here to there. There's always something that God wants you to do. There's always another difficulty to work through. You know, I've worked with new Christ followers for a long time. Ever since we began the church in 1991, I've been sitting with people who've received Jesus. And it's a great privilege. But one of the things that new Christians often say is, well, Art, why is this happening in my life? I'm now a Christian. Shouldn't everything be great? And I have to remind them of 1 Peter 4 that says, beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you as though something strange were happening. See, because when you become a Christ follower, God doesn't shield you from every difficulty in life for reasons we'll talk about in a moment. He doesn't make the world like a monastery. Wouldn't that be great if he did? Okay, you're now a Christian. Now you're in a monastery. Everything is beautiful. All I do to go to is I have to go to Vespers and, ooh, you know, and we worship God. It's all wonderful. It's a monastery. No. Evening will come, and you will have to go down to the sea, and you will have to face a journey, and you'll have to do what's necessary to get from here to there. You'll have to handle a task. You'll have to be engaged in a challenge. You'll have to have a difficulty. The very nature of life includes struggle. We struggle, according to Hebrews 12, against sin. We struggle for righteousness' sake. We struggle to be effective in whatever God is asking us to do. We struggle with circumstances that are grim. And in fact, James 1:2 makes it clear that we will always face many trials, trials of many kinds. So there's always going to be a sea crossing. But that brings us to the second lesson. Not only we face a sea crossing many times, but also lesson two, often the journey will be uncertain and uncomfortable. Isn't this encouraging this morning? Okay? You're going to be in sea crossings, you're going to be uncomfortable, and it's going to be uncertain. Well, look at verse 17b here. It's now dark. It is now dark, and Jesus has not yet come to them. And the sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. Most of us are pretty excited about adventures with Jesus. I think all sincere Christians, we want an adventure with Jesus, don't you? I do. Man, it's time for an adventure. This is beautiful. Okay. But here in John 6, it's another story. When the disciples get here to the boat, it's evening. So, you know, it's kind of that shadowy period between day and night. And they go down to the sea, but now it's dark. And we're thinking as we read the story, oh no, what's going to happen to these disciples as they try to cross in the dark? Why are they even attempting this crossing 7-8 miles? And by the way, I'll tell you why they're doing the crossing. You know why? Because it had to be done. You know, sometimes you don't have options. It's nice to have options, isn't it? But sometimes you don't get options. Sometimes the illness or the task or the loss appears, and you've got to deal with it. Doesn't matter if it's not good timing. You can't say to God, oh, God, bring this back 2 years from now. I'll be in better shape. No, it comes now. Sometimes the timing is not up to us, and that's part of what makes it so uncomfortable. Here in John 6, not only do we observe that it's dark, but it mentions rough seas. Now, the Sea of Galilee is about 600 feet below sea level. So what happens is cool air rushes and to displace the warm air over the lake, and then violent squalls are the result. Even today, around that lake, power boats have to be docked in times like this because they can't power through it. The winds are so powerful and the seas are so rough. And in fact, you guys, when I read this this week and I was looking at the Greek sentence uses an unusual phrase. And the phrase for the wind here, it says that the wind was awakened. It's almost like the wind is another character in this story. Like it's a sea monster and it is awakened to get at these guys. It's awakened to trap the disciples. And here are these disciples in this little wooden boat, just roaring, rowing away, going they have to go 6-8 miles across the lake. Now, finally, in this text, we learn something else here. Not only the water's rough, not only is the wind strong, but Jesus had not yet come to them. Now, this sounds like they probably have waited for Jesus on the shore. He didn't get there. Maybe they just left without him. Certainly, Jesus has not abandoned them. They are in an ongoing relationship with Jesus. Nothing's changed. But at this moment, the emphasis in the text is on the Jesus-less disciples out there in the midst of a terrible storm, rowing for all they are worth, with no assurance of when Jesus is going to show up. Now, you should know that in Matthew 8, there's another sea crossing. And on that sea crossing, Jesus is actually in the boat. You'd think, wow, that'd be great. But he was asleep. And what does it say? They were just as afraid with him in the boat because he was asleep. I don't want to read too much into this. Jesus has not yet come to them. But it seems to me that whether Jesus is in the boat or ready to get in the boat or far away from the boat, we can still feel as if he's not paying attention to our particular crossing, that somehow we don't have a sense of his presence. We have no awareness that he is near. Believers, have some of you felt that way? I think most of us have. It's dark. It's stormy. We're rowing for all we're worth. And we're wondering when Jesus is going to show up to change what needs to be changed. Friends, sometimes the sea crossings we experience in life are both uncertain and uncomfortable. I've watched my father-in-law, his name is Ken Nickel, I've watched him see his wife, Dora, slide into Alzheimer's for the last 20 years. She's had it for 20 years. He has cared for her all of that time until last year, in which he could no longer care for her. She's now in a group home. Friends, it has been a dark and windy sea crossing for my father-in-law. There have been times when he has not been able to perceive the presence of God in the midst of the storm. There are times when, for him, Jesus had not yet come. Friends, one of the most difficult parts of any sea crossing, any test of faith, is any task or difficulty, any pain that we're going through, is the uncertainty that comes with it. I mean, something's changing, maybe for the worse. We don't know what to do. We don't know how long it's going to last. It's dark. We can't see ahead. The wind is blowing. The noise is amazing. Spray is coming up in our face. It's all so uncertain. We can't see the shore. Even if we could see the shore, it would be better. But we can't see it. There's often in that sea crossing then a kind of disquiet that comes into our heart. Oh man, what's going to happen next? Now some of you are in a sea crossing and it looks dark and Jesus has not yet come. That is, he hasn't solved the problem. Maybe it's a loss. Maybe it's a marital difficulty. Maybe it's a parental sea crossing, because there are plenty of those in which we see one of our children in trouble. And we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe you're a young professional and you're trying to make ends meet and your boss is putting pressure on you. Whatever the sea crossing is, your world just got more uncertain. If only you could see the outcome. If only you could know when and how everything was going to be made better. But no, we live with that uncertainty. And of course, along with the uncertainty is this incredible discomfort. The loss, the challenge, the task, man, it has pain. Now, some of you might be asking, but Art, surely in the Bible, when we look at all the Bible characters, all those heroes of faith and so many other people, surely they had life without sea crossings. You got to be kidding. Okay, the whole Bible is full of sea crossings. The whole Bible is full. I mean, the Apostle Paul has a whole paragraph. Here's all my sea crossings. Well, I was beaten this many times. I was imprisoned this many times. In fact, guys, just for your edification here, I have selected one tiny portion of the Apostle Paul's life. It's found in Acts 27. I thought we would read it together. See, for all the words here, look at all the words that have to do with comfort and beauty and greatness, okay? We made slow headway for many days and had difficulty arriving off of Cnidus. And when the wind did not allow us to hold our course, we sailed to the lee of Crete opposite Salmone. We moved along the coast with difficulty and came to a place called Fair Havens near the town of Lesia. Any words of comfort in there? Any words of, it's easy, slow headway, difficulty arriving, the wind did not allow us. We move with difficulty. That's a sea crossing right there. And that's what often we face. Many times, the sea crossings have a lot of discomfort attached to them. That's the only point I'm making. Uncertainty, discomfort. Now, lest you be beaten down too much, there is a third truth here that is really amazing. And the third truth is this. The third lesson is this. Jesus alone calms our deepest fears during a sea crossing. There it is. He alone can calm those fears. Not a bank account, not your, you know, your family. No, no. It's all Jesus. Look what he says in 19 and 20. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus standing on the sea, coming near the boat, and they were frightened. But he said to them, "It is I. Do not be afraid." Now notice where these guys are. Three and a half miles into the middle of the lake. Well, they're three and a half miles from shore, and they've got three and a half miles to shore. They are right in the middle. And as so often happens, we get right in the middle of something before we really see Jesus. To this point in the story, Jesus had not yet come. Wouldn't it be great? I thought of this as I was writing the sermon this week. Wouldn't it be great if just before a bad sea crossing, Jesus would show up and talk about the passage planning? And he would show up and he would start diagramming, and we would know everything that was coming. Okay, listen, Big Lair, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go through a little sea crossing. It's going to take 6 months, okay? Now, listen, don't worry, because you're going to navigate from here to there, then you have to navigate over here. And by the way, Lair, listen, your engine is going to go out about 3 quarters. Yeah, it is. It's going to go out, buddy, and you're going to have to put the sail up. But it's okay, you'll sail for a while. But listen, I just want to say one other thing. Listen, near the end, there's going to be a shipwreck. But don't worry, it's all going to be okay. Guys, wouldn't that be wonderful? Because about the time we got to the shipwreck, we'll be going, "Yay, it's almost over!" You know? But instead, when we get to the shipwreck, we're going, "Oh no, what's going to happen next?" We're just, you know, we're crushed. The fact is, guys, we can go a long time through any sea crossing before we catch a glimpse of what Jesus wants to do or what he is going to do. What the potential problem in all of that is, fear and anxiety. Now, some of you are going, "Well, I'm not really afraid." Guys, fear has all different, it's the bell curve of fear, okay? How does the bell curve of fear over here, we have debilitating, paralyzing fear. And over here, we just have this sense of just disquiet deep in our heart. And the disquiet says, things are not okay, and that's not okay. Okay, so there's the bell curve of fear. So wherever you are on the bell curve, it's still fear. However strong that fear is, it won't help you on the journey. Now, concern may help you. Concern connects you to Jesus. Okay, God, here we are. We're on this sea journey. We just really need you. You go to Jesus often. And maybe concern will help you take personal responsibility for something you need to do. That'll be great. But guess what? Fear only spends whatever energy you have and uses it to fret about all the disastrous ways your sea crossing might end. Now, here in John 6, it's not clear why these guys are afraid. Hey, we don't have any information about why. Was it the stormy sea? Was it the supernatural display of Jesus walking on the water? If I were to guess, it would be a combination of things. But guess what? We may not know what they're afraid about, but we know all too clearly what we fear, correct? We know it very clearly. We fear failure. We feel abandonment. We fear that we won't have what we need when we need it. We fear a bad outcome of the difficulty that we are in. We fear illness. We feel something bad will happen to our children. We fear that our country is going down the tubes. Guys, and listen, you can have sea crossing as a teenager. Teenagers and young adults, they have their sea crossings, their fears. And, parents have fears. We know what our fears are. And what does Jesus say to our fears? "It is I, do not be afraid." That's pretty clear. The phrase, it is I, is pretty important. It's the Greek phrase, ego eimi. And I've written it for you there because I want you to get it. Jesus uses this exact phrase of himself many times in John. Now, it's most fully developed in John 8. And when we get there, I'll talk more about it. But literally, these two Greek words mean, I am. This phrase, you may remember, harkens back to Exodus chapter 3, when Moses was having a confab with God about taking God's people out of Israel. And he was pretty worried about it. Look what he says in Exodus 3. Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers have sent me to you, and they say, what is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. So the divine name, the name God uses for himself is I am. Now it's clear that in John 6:20, Jesus is identifying himself. It is I. Okay, that's one level. But there's another level of meaning here. It's not as strongly developed here as it will be in John 8, but it still hints at this. Jesus is using the sacred name of God to identify himself. Essentially, he's saying to his disciples, remember who stands in front of you. Remember, I am is here. I am the one who delivered Israel from Egypt, the one who delivered Elijah from so many things, the one who delivered Daniel from the lion's den, the one who stood with Stephen as he was martyred, the one who has stood with Christians throughout thousands of years. And after you remember who I am, do not be afraid. Guys, what if Art Hunt would stand in front of you in some dark sea crossing, and I stood in front of you and said, it's me. Be not afraid. And I said it with very sincerely and with great confidence. How would that feel? Wouldn't that be great? How would that feel? You might say, well, thanks for coming, Art. But you would have no, you know, it would be kind of empty, wouldn't it? But the point is pretty simple. When God is with you, when he shows up and says, I am, be not afraid, that's a little different. Jesus is the remedy for our fears. And yes, our fears are often about something bad that's going to happen, some difficulty. We fret, we fear, we're down. But guys, I'm going to speak to the more experienced believers here now. You've been serving God for a while. Not only do we have sea crossings that involve difficulty, man, we believers also experience fear when God gives us an assignment. Isn't that true? What's the first thing we do when God gives us an assignment? Oh, God, we can't do it. We're not going to be any good at that. Give it to somebody else. Because we're afraid. And you see that all the way through the scripture. Here's Moses. I can't think. He's very frightened about it all, you know. And Joshua, he can't send him. I'm sorry about the spit here. I don't think I got anybody. Did I get anybody on the front? I don't think so. Thank you. That was unplanned. I should have had a spit guard there. But Joshua, he's about to go into the promised land. He's frightened. For everyone involved in doing something for God, the tendency is to be afraid. Lord, you called me to this task, but I really can't do it. What does Jesus say to you? It is I, be not afraid. I am, be not afraid. Sometimes the storm in your life is there because you're trying to obey God. And it seems more than you can handle. The same remedy for you is for your fear. Be not afraid. Rely on Jesus. Now, if you're a new Christian, you might be thinking, but Art, sometimes the bad thing does happen. You didn't get what you needed. I mean, the bad thing happens. That's right. Sometimes the bad thing does happen. But I would argue that God always supplies what you need most. Sometimes our God decides that what you need most is not deliverance from the sea crossing, but strength in the sea crossing. So you cry out, and he provides strength in your inner person, just like he says he'll do in Ephesians 3:6. You cry out to him because you're crushed with no hope, and the Spirit of God, just like it says that he will do in Romans 15. The Spirit of God fills you with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. So you get what you need. God can deliver from the storm and sometimes does. Have some of you been delivered from storms? Yeah, most of us have. But you'd be hard-pressed to find promises that God will deliver you from every difficulty. What do you find instead? God will be with you through every difficulty. Hebrews 13:15 says exactly that. 13:5. I will never leave you or forsake you. Romans 8:39 says approximately the same thing. Nothing in all creation will be able to separate you from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus. God is with us in the midst of our sea crossing. And often, Christians, often God reveals himself in greater ways in the midst of difficulty and challenge. We get to experience firsthand his provision. We get to experience firsthand his strength, his help, his comfort. What does it take to experience those things? It takes trust. And he wants to give us an opportunity in every difficulty to trust him, to grow in our faith, to pass the test of faith. Guys, one of the greatest examples of this is in Genesis, you know, the last half of Genesis, and it's the life of Joseph. Here's Joseph. He's a prideful young man. He gets thrown down into the well. He's down in the well. What do you think he's doing down there? Oh, God, you got to get me out of here. But no, he doesn't get out of here. Okay, then they take him, they put him on the caravan to Egypt as a slave. Oh, God, send the drones right now. Have them bomb everything. And so then, but I, like, spare me and I'll escape. No, that doesn't happen. He goes to Egypt. He's now in Egypt. Now he's in prison. Oh, God, you got to get me out of here. No, years in prison. What is he doing that whole time? Guys, it's so clear. Every test Joseph passes, every test, his character is more deeply honed. Every test helps him to trust God more. And pretty soon, he's just saying, okay, God, it's you and me. I trust you through every difficulty. Guys, this tells us why Jesus didn't fix this from the beginning here in John 6. He knew the storm was coming. Why did he deliberately allow his friends to go into danger? Well, we already said, first, he's rescuing them from the crowd. But number two, there was another reason. He wanted them to grow in their faith. He wanted them to trust him. The disciples had this great joy of this feeding the 5,000. Remember that? Oh, man, the 5,000, this is super. Look what Jesus could do. And it's a sign that he is who he says he is. They were all excited. And look how he is provided. You see, God showed himself. Look how he's provided. The feeding of the 5,000 was the lesson of provision. But the sea crossing was the examination after the lesson. All right? Are you going to trust me? See how I can provide? Now go to the sea crossing. And will you trust me through it? Guys, that's the same question to all of us in our sea crossings. Are you going to trust me, cling to me, and follow me? And that's exactly what every trial, loss, difficulty, challenge is all about. Are you going to trust Jesus through it? I am. Be not afraid. Wow. This is exactly the response that you see in the psalmist. Remember in the middle of the service, I read to you Psalm 73, and it says this, whom have I in heaven but you, and earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart. And then remember what he did in verse 28? I will make you my refuge. In other words, I will trust you through this difficulty. This is an expression of faith and trust. Now, friends, I want to share with you something in my life that has been difficult this last 10 days. The election last week introduced a lot of uncertainty in my life and deep disquiet in my heart. It seemed to me that now we believers in our country we're now on a new path. And the path is an America that does not cling to Christian values. It seems to me that in the middle of that election, when I saw that four states had voted for gay marriage, I thought, wow, this means that we're a post-Christian nation. It's been coming a long time. But I saw it more clearly that we have kind of crossed a line. And guys, that, you know, I didn't sleep a wink on election night. I was up all night. I couldn't sleep at all. And I was going, God, what is happening here? Now, I just thought the future of our country looks less certain now. Now, why am I telling you this? I'm not trying to be political here, guys. I'm just being real. I'm just telling you what was going on in my heart. It was all about a sea crossing. I tell you this because, you know, over those days, I had to ask myself, okay, God, what are you doing here? What do you want from me? How is it all going to work out? But it didn't take me long to remember, it is I, do not be afraid. Didn't take me long. It's one thing to be concerned, and that concern will take you to political action if you need to do that. It'll take you to vote well and to take that responsibility clearly, but it would be quite another thing to fret and to moan and to become bitter and pessimistic. God is with me, and He is with all Christians in this sea crossing. It is I, be not afraid. Now, might there be some suffering in the days ahead? Well, Peter 2,000 years ago told us there would be, okay? Even if you suffer for righteousness' sake, he says, you will be blessed. And then he says, what does he say? Have no fear of them, nor be troubled. I think Peter's saying, trust Jesus in the midst of the sea crossing, whether it's persecution, whether it's a Christian nation going the opposite direction of God, and understand that he's ultimately in charge. Jesus remedies our fears, not because he tells us what's going to happen, not because he fixes everything. He remedies our fears because he promises to be with us. And when he is with us, we realize that he's in charge. And he will do what's best. And at that moment then of life and death, that moment of pain and loss, that moment of challenge and difficulty, our God seeks a response of faith in us. And that brings us to one final lesson. Lesson 4, inviting Jesus into the boat takes us to the other side, okay? Wow, look what it says again in verse 20. It is I, do not be afraid. And then they were glad to take him into the boat. And immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. Simply put, the disciples were willing to receive him into the boat. Now, you might say, well, duh. I mean, it's a storm. It's dark. It's dangerous. Of course, they're going to invite Jesus. They're going to be glad that Jesus is there. Guys, remember how we started the book of John? John 1:11? He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. It's always, you know, the psalmist in 73, I will make you my refuge. It's always possible for believers to fail to do that. Friends, remember, you know, here it is, it's clear. I've talked to many Christians in the middle of a sea crossing. It's one of the great privileges that pastors have. We walk with people sometimes through sea crossings. And what happens is that I am so encouraged many times by God's people because they willingly, with gladness, invite Jesus into the boat. I mean, they say, yes, Jesus, this is difficult. We're gonna walk with you through this difficulty. We invite you into this thing, Lord. And they begin to walk then with him. Some of you who know me, I've told this story many times, but my son John had cancer when he was 17, tumor the size of a fist right in the middle of his chest. We got out to the car from the doctor. First thing we do is, okay, God, here we are. We're at the start of something that's going to take us a long time. We commit this to you in every way. We will walk with you through this cancer, and we'll do it. Guys, I see that in many of God's people, but then I'm also grieved sometimes, guys, because a believer will say, well, why is God allowing this in my life? And they stay preoccupied on their sea crossing, preoccupied with their pain. So instead of staying alert to what God may want to do in their lives, instead of staying alert to all the goodness that he will bring in that situation, they live in fear and in darkness. Notice with me here, there's a miraculous provision as the disciples invited Jesus into the boat. It's a miracle. They cross 3 miles like that. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be the norm in your life, okay? As a matter of fact, you know, you can't say just trust Jesus, cling to him, invite him into the situation, and bam, the sea crossing is over. You make it to the other side. Well, but here's what I am saying. You trust Jesus, you cling to him, you invite him into the situation, and you will always make it to the other side of fear. And then it's up to Jesus the other things that he will supply. It's up to Jesus what provision he will make. But you will always make it to the other side of fear if you trust him. Guys, in an incredible, compact 6 verses, the Apostle John has expressed in powerful images the reenactment of a sea crossing that all of us have to make. All of us. The voyage from fear to trust. The voyage from seeing the circumstances alone to seeing the God who can do whatever he wants with those circumstances. The voyage from seeing God in a limited way to seeing a fuller picture of who God is. Now, for all of us who have ever been on a sea crossing, let's connect right now with the one who can take us to the other side.
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-848-2028.